When it comes to maximizing time in the uplands, without fail, Onyx Hunt is my most valuable tool. From planning my next hunt through a new bird cover to navigating in the field, Onyx Hunt is truly with me wherever I go. With detailed mapping and satellite imagery, along with a multitude of map layers from land access to forestry and habitat information, and easy-to-use tools to mark, measure, and catalog important information, Onyx Hunt seamlessly integrates digital scouting with boots-on-the-ground time in the field. With offline mapping and Apple CarPlay integration, you are free to explore the wild landscapes our beloved upland birds inhabit. Planning your next move in the uplands begins with knowing where you stand, and for me, that starts and stops with Onyx Hunt. Download the Onyx Hunt app today and use the promo code BSP20 to save 20% on your Onyx Hunt subscription. When the miles rack up faster than your flush count, that's when you'll truly appreciate your hunting vest from Final Rise. Built for the uplands and proudly sewn in the USA, the complete lineup of hunting vests from Final Rise, from their all-new Summit XT down to the minimalist Sidekick system, are all built upon the foundational load-bearing waist belt and low-profile shoulder strap system, which allow you to carry all the gear you need and do so comfortably while maintaining your ability to move freely and perform when you need to most. With a complete lineup of accessories and newly released performance field apparel, Final Rise has the gear you need to help you get the most out of every mile and every flush. Final Rise gear is built for the uplands. Get yours today at finalrise.com.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Welcome to the Project Upland Podcast, where we discuss all things upland hunting. We plan to take you into some of our favorite bird covers as we talk to the people that hunt them and the organizations that support them. We'll also break down the dogs, guns, and gear used to pursue them, and of course, we'll share the stories that celebrate this American tradition.
It's one of those things that you do that feels timeless.
My dad brought home our first Brittany when I was about 10 years old.
The red gods are calling, and I must go.
These are your stories.
This is the Project Upland Podcast, presented by Onyx Hunt. On this episode of the show, we talk a new upland hunting vest with the guys from Hunt Ready. Welcome to the show for episode number 97. Project Upland Podcast is presented by Onyx Hunt, creators of the most comprehensive digital mapping system for hunters. Use the promo code PUP20 to save 20% on your Onyx Hunt subscription. And by Eukanuba Premium Performance Dog Food, out in the field, how you prepare determines how you perform. With balanced fat and protein to support peak condition in your bird dog, Eukanuba Premium Performance Dog Food enhances strength, energy, and endurance, so when that tailgate finally drops, you and your dogs are ready for anything. Strong, focused, ready for anything, that is a Eukanuba dog. And by Gumleaf USA, high quality, handcrafted, premium rubber boots that stand the test of time. I got a new pair of the Viking Techs, which are very similar to my standard Viking models. However, these do not have the full length neoprene lining, so they're a little bit lighter weight and they are a little bit better for mild and warmer temperatures. So far, loving them. They've got all the same features that I love about Gumleaf boots: durable rubber, super
comfortable Vibram sole. They can go just about anywhere and do just about anything. They'll keep your feet dry and comfortable. Check out Gumleaf Boots by visiting gumleafusa.com. Use the promo code PUP10 to save 10% from Gumleaf USA. And by CZ USA Shotguns. Shotguns designed with the Upland Hunter in mind, from the Bob White and Sharptail side-by-sides to the Upland Ultralight, Wing Shooter Elite, Over and Unders. They've got semi-autos, they've got pumps. If you're in the market for a new shotgun for bird hunting, CZ USA has you covered. Head over to CZ-USA to learn more about all their shotguns. And by Turnbull Restoration, the most recognized name in antique and vintage firearm restoration, period correct metal finishes, and custom reproductions of iconic firearms. Turnbull has been dedicated to the faithful and accurate restoration of classic American shotguns, rifles, and handguns for over 35 years. If you want to see more from Turnbull Restoration and you want to learn more about what they can do, head over to turnbullrestoration.com/Upland to see a photo essay documenting the entire restoration process of a Parker shotgun. That's turnbullrestoration.com/Upland. And finally, by Dakota 283 Kennels. Kennels built to last a lifetime. One-piece rotomold design, frame steel door, everything you and your dog need in a kennel for a safe and successful hunting trip. Head over to Dakota283.com to check out their kennels and all of the products from Dakota 283. All right, this week's winner of the podcast giveaway is Jared. Jared left us a review on iTunes. Project Upland t-shirt headed his way very soon. Anybody listening could be next week's winner of the podcast giveaway. All you have to do is leave us a rating, leave us a review in your podcast app, click those stars and leave us a review, subscribe to the podcast, share the podcast, or send us some feedback or a guest suggestion. We'd love to hear from our listeners. You can email me at nick.larson@northwoodscollective.com. All right, one quick announcement for you. If you haven't heard or you haven't been following along, I have started doing something pretty fun on Friday nights. It's a YouTube live stream dubbed The Hunter's Happy Hour, doing it in tandem with a few of my friends in the podcasting world, Ron Bame of the Hunting Dog Podcast, Tyler Webster of the Birds, Booze, and Buds Podcast, along with Doug from Soggy Dog Gear. We've been having a lot of fun with it. We've started to invite guests on. This week, coming up on Friday, we have a special guest from OnX Hunt, proud partner of the Project Upland podcast. We have a lot of fun doing it. It's available for live stream. You can also check it out after the fact. There's 3 episodes up. It's been a ton of fun. People are commenting, watching, following along. We're just trying to do something a little bit different to provide some entertainment and some relief for ourselves. Another excuse to chat bird dogs, upland hunting, gear, all the fun stuff that we talk about here on the podcast in a slightly different format. So check out the Hunter's Happy Hour on YouTube, coming at you live Friday nights, 7 p.m. Central for the time being. That may change in the future, but for now, that's where it's at. Check it out. I'll drop a link in the show notes. All right, we're going to jump right into today's episode with our guests, Heath Sainer and Jared Stewart of Hunt Ready. Hunt Ready is a new-to-the-market upland hunting company. They released a hunting vest, launched it at Pheasant Fest earlier this year where I got to check it out. I had a conversation with Heath and Jared last week about the Hunt Ready story, how they came to be upland hunting entrepreneurs, why they chose to design a vest, and we talked all about the Hunt Ready vests that are available for pre-order today. I hope you enjoy this one. I hope you learn more about Hunt Ready vests, and if you have questions and are interested, you're going to find out how to get a hold of Heath and Jared over at Hunt Ready towards the end of the show. So with that said, let's welcome into the conversation and onto the Project Upland podcast of Hunt Ready, Heath Sainer and Jared Stewart. And with that, I'd like to welcome everybody back to another episode of the Project Upland podcast. I'm your host, Nick Larson, and here with me today are two guests to talk about an exciting new brand and product offering in the upland hunting space. This is the time of year, I think, when a lot of people are reflecting back on their seasons and maybe thinking about gear and thinking about things that they want to initiate in the upcoming season. So excited to have these two gentlemen here with me. And we'll start with Heath. Heath, could you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about yourself and your connection to Hunt Ready.
Hey, Nick. So thanks for having us on first. Really appreciate the opportunity to be here. Big fan of the podcast, so it's a little surreal to be on this end of it, right? but yeah, Heath Sainer with Hunt Ready, one of the co-founders. I from the Southwest Missouri area, have hunted, most of my life. Actually started as a toddler. My great grandma would take me out in the fields and run trap lines and chase squirrels and rabbits. And then from there, it's just been, you know, turkey, deer, out west, chasing some big game. And then over the last probably 10 to 15 years or so, really got into upland heavily. And so I'm sure we can dive into that a little bit further later, but that's kind of my story.
Yeah, for sure. And also with us is Jared Stewart. Jared, introduce yourself.
Yeah, appreciate it. Jared Stewart, the other co-founder of Hunt Ready. And yeah, just kind of similar story to Heath. Actually, grew up, you know, in a family of hunters and memories of, you know, my grandmother was a hunter. She was, you'd find her in a stand hunting whitetail and kind of, you know, just always, you know, didn't really think anything of it at the time, you know, to have a grandma that was a hunter and a fisherwoman and then have memories of, you know, my dad taking me to deer camp at my grandfather's and all the uncles and cousins getting together and doing that. And then just, you know, we kind of just hunted about everything and ended up, I'm a Kansas boy by birth, moved to Missouri. I think Heath and I, we just connected early on when I moved in and kind of been buddies and, you know, running through fields and kind of getting into all kinds of trouble together. So, and yeah, just pretty much been a hunter my whole life. So.
Good deal. You touched on a little bit there, Jared, but I was curious what was the initial connection between you and Heath? How did you guys meet up? Was it upland hunting or was it something else?
I think we just probably naturally gravitated to each other. We were, you know, just we're country boys, like to get out, hunt and fish. I wouldn't say necessarily that you know, upland bird hunting was the connection, but just being outdoors in general, riding four-wheelers together, you know, pond jumping, all kinds of stuff like that. So I think that was, you know, pretty much we had a bunch of the same passions and love for the outdoors.
Yeah, got it. Heath, bird dogs, are they part of the picture for you?
Yes. Yes, I have two bird dogs myself. I have Brittany. He's about eight or so. He's the first bird dog that I ever took on from a pup, trained myself. I'd say trained. I mean, I think we probably trained each other and him more training me than the other way around, as that normally goes, I think.
Yep.
And then I also have a Drott. And then my daughter actually has a Vizsla pup that she worked for and saved up for and got and has taken the lead on training as well. So within my household, I've got three. That's my story on the bird dog side.
Excellent. How about you, Jared?
Yeah, I've got a 5-year-old black lab who's a better duck dog than he is upland dog. And then right at about a year ago, I bought a yellow lab from a kennel out of Kansas, and primarily with the idea that he was going to be an upland primarily dog. And so kind of the same boat. It's been an adventure with him. He's bird crazy, but we're still kind of working on getting his manners right and, you know, getting him to a point where he's a little bit, you know, maybe a little bit more on the manageable side of the field, if you will. And then I actually just kind of ran into, I had a buddy that had a GSP and had got it. It didn't work out. And I'd kind of always wanted one, but just the lifestyle that we live is like, I didn't know if it was ever really going to be a good fit, but we got that little guy right after the new year, and man, been loving that. That's just kind of a whole new experience for us, so pretty cool, actually.
So you got three as well. You guys have some dog power.
Yeah.
That are some expensive food bills. Yeah.
It makes road trips, you know, into the uplands interesting at times, trying to pack that many dogs. You know, I'll tell you though, the cool thing about that is, getting to hunt with such a variety, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, between the different breeds, You know, they, and each dog even, right, has its own personality and I don't want to say strengths and weaknesses, but things that they excel at, right, and are good at. So that's been fun. It's been pretty cool. We've got a group of guys that we hunt with pretty regularly, and they have even a few more breeds. So it's a pretty good time. I know you're a setter guy, or at least I think so.
Yeah. I stumbled into being a setter guy, and I guess that's what I am because I have one dog, and he's a setter. But
yeah, well, yeah. And so you know, it's just fun, the different types of breeds that you know you get exposed to. And get a chance to hunt with as you expand the group of people that you know in the uplands and get a chance to hunt with. So,
yeah, I think you raise an interesting point, or I guess it's something that I think about often, especially being somebody that's on their first bird dog. You know, he'll be six in June, so I'm 6 years into this, which I've certainly learned a lot in the last 6 years. But you know, think of how intimately well you know your dogs, and then. You know, how hard it is to get to intimately know others' dogs. I mean, you might have a close hunting partner that you hunt with them a lot, but, you know, unless you're a pro trainer or somebody that, you know, you have lots of dogs all the time, it's like, how could you really intimately know the differences between one breed or another? Because, again, so much of it comes back to that, I think, that individual dog, like you mentioned, Heath. So I think about that a lot, and I certainly appreciate any chance I get to hunt with or see another dog just, again, for another... You know, another reference point as far as like what makes each dog unique and how they do things differently.
Yeah, very much so. We, it reminds me of something that it's been probably 10 years ago or so through a forum, Pheasant Hunting, Ultimate Pheasant Hunting Forum.com, I think. I just, long story short, I made a connection with an individual. And he just happened to be a retired trainer, had a plantation. His family had a plantation down south, and he invited us up to South Dakota to hunt with him, just kind of through that forum. And the thing that's been so interesting to me, you know, to your point about the different dogs and personalities, someone that's been around that many dogs for that long. And I think he trained for like 40 years or so, just the things they pick up on. Right. And, yep. And I think for us, or for me at least, I've learned so much from Tony. His name's Tony Clark. That just being in the field and spending time with people like that, it's amazing how much you can absorb, you know, informally, you know, it doesn't have to be a book or a video or anything like that. Just trying to find people that can mentor you in the field. And I've appreciated the upland community and how open it's been, I think. I've learned a lot from a lot of people.
Yeah.
And encourage those that may be hesitant, right, to jump in or to get that first dog. Find those people that you can learn from and be mentored by, and then down the road try and find opportunities to do that and pay it forward.
But that's a good point. I mean, like you said, the upland community I think is very open as far as like reaching out and talking to people, and you can get a lot of information. With the bird dogs thing is that interesting wrinkle where you can, you know, you get a lot of armchair quarterbacking and you can get a lot of cheap bird dog advice on Facebook, but I think that just it strengthens the point that you make to, you know, do your best to find those people that really do have that genuine experience and the ability to read dog behavior, because you need to have a few of those people and keep them close, because their advice is going to be way more valuable than, you know, the stuff you're going to find on Facebook. And that's the unique thing about bird dogs, because that's their animals, and animal behavior goes a lot deeper than talking about shot size or chokes or, you know, side by side or over under, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's those little things. It's been amazing.
What is your primary... We'll talk a little bit more about upland hunting, I think, later on, but I just want to get this. What is your primary upland hunting pursuits look like? I mean, are you hunting pheasant and quail there in Missouri? Are you doing a lot of traveling? What does that look like, Jared, if you want to tee off on that?
Yeah, I really enjoy going after the quail and the pheasant. You know, as Heath said... I kind of piggybacked on his coattails. I had found myself kind of in a place in my career and with family where I was just extremely busy. And he said, "Hey man, let's get together. I've got, you know, some opportunities to go up to South Dakota and would love for you to, you know, make a trip with us." And kind of just, we had, I didn't really explain this, but I got married, moved to Oklahoma. My wife's from Oklahoma. And so kind of Heath and I, you know, just weren't able to connect like we'd used to in the past. So, I think it was just kind of a start for me to kind of get back on track with kind of, you know, one of my childhood buddies. And so we made the trek to South Dakota and just absolutely fell in love with it. And again, just had a great time. And so that's kind of been an annual trip for us to always put that on the books and make that happen. And then, yeah, it's just kind of, you know, it's the bug, right? You just, you get bitten by it. And next thing you know, it's, you know, more shotguns, it's dogs, it's multiple dogs. It's, you know, so it just ramps up quickly. And, again, it's just, it's being out in nature and experiencing all of it, watching the dogs work. I mean, it just, whether you're killing birds or not, I mean, it's just being out there in excitement. So I think last year, this last season, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma. So those are the primary states that, you know, we were going and looking for birds. So
cool.
Yeah. And for me, it's, you know, geographically, right? I mean, it's part of it is just the proximity by which you can make a trip, right? On, on a, you know, 3-4 day trip or whatever. So the Dakotas, Nebraska, and Nebraska is kind of one of those hidden gems in that it offers some significant diversity in terms of both terrain and species. So between, you know, sharp-tailed grouse, you got pheasant and quail, obviously. And then Kansas with prairie chickens, pheasant and quail as well, Oklahoma with Jared, and then Missouri. And I have an opportunity here in Missouri with some woodcock. So there's opportunity to get into that. And then I do a lot of waterfowl as well, which may have been obvious with my statements in terms of breeds. But I duck hunt with both my Brittany and my Drott, actually. So some waterfowl in there as well.
When is the Missouri woodcock season? You know, I mean, I could probably piece it together just based on what I know of them flying through, but are you talking December, November, December?
It is earlier than that.
Okay.
I don't know what the exact dates are off the top of my head, but it is earlier in the season. I want to say, well, I'd hate to put a date out there exactly.
Yeah. I was just asking generally anyways, but
yeah.
Okay. Cool. And you have gotten out to pursue them as they're flying through before?
Yeah, and it is challenging. It's, you know, the cover's tough. It's nasty. Actually, you know, to be honest, I stumbled into it early on.
Sure.
I was actually looking for new habitat on public ground to chase bobwhite quail and just got into woodcock, right? And the dog doesn't know the difference. So, you know, started getting some points and then started kind of putting it together in terms of the habitat, right? A little more wet, a little more moisture. That a lot of habitat around like lakes and rivers, right? Mm-hmm. That edge material. And then if you can find that row crop, that's what I was looking for, right? For quail, and just stumbled into them. So it just opened up a whole nother world, right, of upland. So it's made sense.
Will you find woodcock and quail overlapping, or are they typically maybe close but separate?
Close.
Okay.
But at least in my experience, and I'm by no means a subject matter expert here, but close. Your quail are typically a little further away from the level of moisture that I find the woodcock in.
Cool. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, let's transition a little bit and definitely talk. We want to dive into Hunt Ready and cover that side of things before we maybe project into the future a little bit later on. But let's get the Hunt Ready story. I mean, this is a new company. It's a new brand. I think if people are on the familiar channels, the Upland channels, Facebook and Instagram, and they've been paying attention to Upland hunting the way that I do, they probably have seen Hunt Ready, but I'm hoping that we're going to educate a lot of folks and inform them on a little bit deeper look at what Hunt Ready is, what you guys are trying to provide to the Upland hunting community, and excited to learn more. So I don't know if Heath or Jared wants to start up on that, but let's just start from the beginning.
Yeah. So I can jump in first. For us, it was, you know, Jared alluded to the fact that years and years ago, we started making the annual run with a core group of guys up to South Dakota. And, you know, from Southwest Missouri, that's a decent amount of windshield time. And, you know, we just started talking about, you know, the gear options that were available to the upland market and you know, started bouncing ideas around about, you know, a lot of what ifs, right? Like, well, yep. what if we could create something that, you know, was lightweight yet durable, you know, that was highly configurable, right, to meet the needs of you know, the various types of pursuit that, you know, even we find ourselves in, right, from cattail sloughs in South Dakota to the scrub brush in Oklahoma, right, the hardwoods in Missouri, you know, the various terrain in Nebraska, right? So that lightweight yet durable was something we talked a lot about. And then the configuration, I think, was really what, at least a key design aspect, I think, that we kind of zeroed in on early and wanted to pursue. And so that led us down a path, right, of researching different types of technologies and, you know, who does configuration well, you know, what markets are verticals. And in, you know, that really led me down the military path, right? The tactical gear market, right? That's about mm-hmm. as configurable as you can get when you're talking about gear and things that might overlap, right? At the time, you know, it was just an idea. And so that really was kind of the spark, right? That, led us down that path. And that was numerous years ago. And so, you know, Hunt Ready then became, an idea, right, from a upland road trip and led us down the pathway of pursuing partners. And that's where we found First Spear, which has been, you know, a key partner of ours, in this venture. They produce gear for military, law enforcement agencies, really globally. I mean, they're a global provider. And having had the opportunity to get a behind the scenes look at their technology and their facilities, that really is what I think sold us down that path. And their excitement to work with us, really, they were very excited. They're located just outside of St. Louis. So we spent quite a bit of time working with those guys, coming up with ideas on what we could do and how we might be able to do it. And so from there, I mean, it was about design, about field testing, about a lot of prototyping, coming up with what we wanted and what we would be proud to put our names on. And so, Jared, I don't know if you have any other thoughts there. Any additional aspects of how we got here, but.
Yeah, I think Heath nailed it pretty well, but I think a lot of it too is just, we kind of, once we decided to do this, is like, let's just build our dream vest. If we can build anything, you know, let's build our dream vest. And so we were building it for ourselves first and foremost. And then, hunting with the crew that we do, we were all wearing different vests and we were just listening, you know, to the things that people feedback were, you know, people were giving us, or, and this was just, again, we're just, when you sit in a truck for, you know, yep. 10, 11, 12 hour drives, you start thinking all kinds of crazy things. So, but then it just kind of became a reality for us. And honestly, some pieces really fell into place. And like he said, First Spear was a huge part of that puzzle. Just being able to work with them and leverage some of their technologies. But it really was, for me, just the ability to create a dream vest, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I, you know, I suspect other, I know that other pursuits are like this, you know, deer hunters, turkey hunters, we tend to be gear nuts really. And whether or not upland hunters are even more so gear nuts than other, forms of hunting, that I guess that's that would be everybody's opinion, but certainly gear is one of those things that it gets talked about in the truck on long drives. I mean, I imagine you guys were having the same conversations that happens in a lot of trucks every fall, you know, guys talking about gear and what vest are you wearing and this and that. Interestingly though, you decided to, you know, take action and see what you could come up with, and like you said, Jared, build your dream vest. So sounds like you kind of narrowed down the vest early. I don't know if you talk about other pieces of gear. Is that in consideration for the future, or is Hunt Ready strictly vests?
So I wouldn't, I mean, I definitely wouldn't say strictly vests. I mean, I think, you know, from my perspective, at least, you know, one thing I'll throw out there, right, is doing my own training. Right, from a dog perspective, like the platform could really be extended, and something I want to do is, you know, training belts or harness rigs of some sort, right? Excuse me. For those, you know, it gets pretty warm down here, and I don't want to wear a full rig, you know, training dogs and early season hunting, dove hunting, you know, things of that nature. I think the platform, because everything is so interchangeable, could really expand well and provide products that would, I think, overlap, you know, pretty well.
Yeah, you got my wheels turning. Like you guys could do a. I'm thinking about sporting clays. You know, I'm getting excited to shoot sporting clays once we can actually get back out and do stuff like that. But you know, I've always. The sporting clays belt I have is interesting. I have just a waist belt, which I kind of like for some reasons, because you're usually shooting in good conditions and that feels, you know, it feels right at the time. But then like when it gets closer to hunting season, I'll start wearing my hunting vest to the sporting clays range, because it's like I want to practice, like, you know, I'm actually hunting and wearing that vest and kind of work through some of that stuff. I wonder if a lightweight sporting clays type vest that could be, you know, you could most people when they sell something like that, they market it as like a dove vest or a sporting clays vest, but something that maybe actually had shoulder straps, so it was like kind of simulating the real experience. I mean, stuff like that. I mean, yeah, there's any number of directions that you guys could go, which is kind of interesting. Before we talk about the vest specifically, I want to get the timeline straight, because you guys just launched. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I know that this has been years in the making and there's been lots of field testing and stuff. So, but like your public launch was earlier this year. Pheasant Fest was a big event for you guys. Is that correct?
Yes. Yep. Pheasant Fest was the official launch.
Okay.
We've had, you know, a number of pre-production units, I guess you would say, right?
Sure.
We've tested and had guys, you know, run through the paces in the field. And then earlier than that, right, we had numerous prototype versions, right, that we tweaked on and all that kind of stuff over the last probably, I'm going to guess, 3 or 4 years, really. 3 years for sure. And so that's kind of the rough timeline. I mean, the ideation phase started, you know, much earlier than that. But, you know, I know guys that have gone through this process understand. I'm super excited to have like a hunting gear company, right? I mean, that's like, as a hunter and an outdoorsman my whole life, like, you know, that's one of those things that a lot of people talk about, right?
Yeah.
But being here, it takes a lot more, or getting to this place where you have something that you can use in the field and you're, it has your logo on it, right? It's pretty cool. Pretty stressful, you know, and there's a lot of hurdles to get through, but it's worth it. And whether or not our vest resonates with someone or not, that's fine. I mean, there's some great options out on the market. But we are proud to have gotten here and have something that we're excited about, and excited to use in the field. So I definitely, you know, wanted to throw that out there, just that while it takes time and effort, if you've got an idea, chase it. Like it's worth it, and see where it goes. Because you never know if you don't try.
Right. Yeah. You guys took action on this, and here you are. You know, you've got a company, you're selling vests. What's the current status of Hunt Ready? Are vests in stock and available to order? Are you still taking pre-orders? What's going on there?
So we are in pre-order phase still.
Okay.
We have a batch coming in the next few weeks that will probably get us to a point of having more of a traditional inventory status. Accessories and pouches, pockets, water bottles, that kind of stuff will be online as well. So we're getting very close to that traditional inventory model.
Okay. Don't want to overlook this either. Significance to the name Hunt Ready. You know, Hunt is H-U-N-T, but then Ready is R-E-D-I. You guys maybe have addressed this on social media or something, but any significance to the name? How did that come about?
Jared, you can take that one. That was...
well, my career is in IT, and we have an acronym for everything. So we were just kind of thinking about, you know, Heath is a marketing guy, and he's got a lot of just, you know, we're kicking around ideas. What do we name this thing? And, you know, it's kind of like this concept of ready for anything, or, you know, the key component of, you know, maximum configurability in the vest. And so he was just like, you know, what about ready? And I was like, yeah, I like that. I mean, it's got a ring to it, but, you know, I wonder if we can, you know, do a play on or an acronym somehow just to kind of drive the point home. And so we just kind of came up with a unique, you know, REDI, and it's just reliable equipment driving inspiration. And it was just kind of, you know, to us, it was like, you know, the system itself is being very durable. You know, again, you know, just chasing after our dreams, if you will. It just kind of seemed to be something that resonated with both of us and still kind of be something that people could remember. And then I think the uniqueness, it's hard from a brand launch perspective. It's like ready, like, are, you know, how do you spell that? Like, but yep. Now that we've kind of been able to gain a little bit of traction, you know, I think, it's starting to resonate with people.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you did well with it. I mean, I guess maybe that's just me, but I'm kind of a fan of when something like that has a little bit deeper meaning. So I like the inspiration and the stuff behind it. But yeah, as the brand awareness builds, you'll you probably get people. Did you have to buy any other website handles to make sure people go to the right spot?
we have definitely had to go down those roads.
Sure. I'm familiar with that in a few of my past projects. So yeah, I know how that goes. But okay, let's talk about the vest.
Yep.
Could you let's just, this is audio obviously only, so it would be much easier if people could look at a picture of this, and we'll make sure there's links and stuff. But let's hear it from you guys. Let's hear kind of a verbal description of the vest and maybe what you are trying to accomplish with each one of the foundational features, and then we'll talk about sort of the modularity of it.
Okay. And I can take a stab at it first.
Sure.
So as mentioned earlier, one of the key things that we wanted to try and achieve was the configurability, right? To make it an option for uplanders to tweak and change based on, you know, their own unique needs. You know, whether it be species driven, right, or terrain driven, or just personal preferences, right, or all of the above. So the platform or the technology that we looked for first was around that. And then once we nailed that down and felt like we had, you know, a very strong option to build around, it then went into there was two main design elements, at least from my perspective, that I really wanted to achieve. And that first was weight distribution. I mentioned that the technology and the platform is lightweight, and there's You know, on our website, depending upon how you configure it, you can add up all the different weights of everything, right? But you know, a fully configured vest is going to run somewhere in the, you know, probably 3 to 4 pound-ish range. So, but then, as you know, right, you throw a box of shells or two, depending upon what you're doing. You load down with water for your dogs. You know, all of that. So, you know, we spend a lot of time in the outdoors, whether it be hiking, camping, you know, so having that fundamental weight distribution on the core, right? So really the belt is where we started to make sure that we could evenly distribute weight, take that off the shoulders, reduce the stress for long days in the field was really kind of where we started. And so, you know, the belt itself is pretty heavily padded. There's some additional lumbar support in the back. And then, from there, you know, it was about ease of use. You know, for me personally, one of my pet peeves is, when I'm in the field, you know, and I'm trying to shove a bird in the pouch or grab a water bottle or reinsert a water bottle after I water the dog, you know, I want to be able to do all that one-handed because I'm always, you know, you're always holding a shotgun, right?
Yeah.
And so a lot of the design from there went down that path, right, of tweaking measurements of the size of the belt, tweaking where the access to the bird pouch was, right, when you reached back, to make all of that as natural as we could, and then started to design around that. So, you know, the belt itself distributes that weight, or that is our objective in that. And so that's where you start really when you go to get sized and fitted on one. On the outside of the belt is where the platform comes in, right? And allows you to change pouches, pockets, really however you want to arrange it. And obviously we sell, you know, Upland inspired type pockets and pouches, but the cool thing about, you know, the First Spear platform is that it's also backwards compatible with your standard Molly or PALS webbing. And so that provides the ability really to then open up to any of your tactical, you know, gear that falls into that standard Molly system. And so we added that as well to the sides of the game pouch and to the back of the game pouch. You know, there's a lot of configuration capability on the sides and the back, you know, the rear of it. And then, you know, added in some permanent storage on the back as well. So, you know, for hats, gloves, whatever, you know, the typical stuff you would carry, small first aid kits. There's an internal security pouch in there that you can shove wallet, keys, cell phone, you know, anything that you don't want to have fall out accidentally, you know, if you're digging through the back. And then the harness, the shoulder yoke and everything, working with First Spear, they manufacture everything, for a company called Hill People. And they do a lot of big game packs, camping, hiking, that type of stuff. So we were able to leverage their harness design, actually. They collaborated with us on that and let us use that. So you'll see some similarities between our harness, our yoke, and theirs. So that was just kind of one of the benefits that we got along the way. So high level, I mean, that's kind of the, hope that's what you're trying to get out there, Nick, but.
Yeah, I would say that's a good description of sort of the foundation of the vest. And really, I mean, what you guys have brought to market is what I would consider I'm not trying to say that it's like it's a strap vest with a weight belt and shoulder straps, a waist belt and shoulder straps. It's a very traditional looking strap vest in that sense of things, but the modularity and the customizability, I would say, is probably the most unique aspect of the Hunt Ready Vest. And that's one of the things that I was talking to you about, Heath. And we just had the conversation that I think, you know, most upland hunters would have together, talking about vests and talking about how I set up mine and how you set up yours. And that was one of the interesting things, Heath, you talked about when you guys were, and I don't think this will come as a surprise to anybody, but when you guys were testing this stuff, you know, each one of you, the individuals in your group, would kind of set up their vest differently. And I don't know if it was the chicken or the egg, if that was sort of a light bulb moment to say, hey, we need to have this customizable and modular, or if you were already thinking along those lines. I mean, Jared, what was it like when you guys were putting this stuff together?
Yeah, I think you kind of hit on a key point where we started to see, man, I think this thing's got some traction to it, because we did get this vest on guys that were going with us, and we're all chasing after the same species, but we just kind of have that moment where we look around, it's like everybody's vest is set up completely different. Mm-hmm. And it just goes back to kind of the whole idea of just maximum configurability. We, you know, Heath is a lefty shooter, so his vest is backwards to me. So, you know, just thinking from the simple things that guys are dealing with in the field, you know, I'm one of those guys where I really want no obstruction across the front of my body. I want clean mount to the shoulder with my shotgun. I don't want things, you know, obstructing that at all. I want just kind of a wide open feel. And so, you know, just knowing that, you know, where Heath is, he, you know, he doesn't mind to have more real estate on the belt, has some, you know, some options to put some more, pockets and pouches on it. You know, it, again, it's just to your, spec, however you want to hunt, whatever makes you feel comfortable in the field. I'm bad enough shot as it is. So I used to just blame it on, you know, well, I can't get a clean mount to my shoulder. So now I've kind of, hosed myself a little bit.
You've lost that excuse.
Yeah, exactly. So.
The other cool thing is the universal nature of that Molly strap. That's something that I haven't really used a lot of. I don't have a lot of gear that integrates with that, but as I did some searching and looking around, the pack that I use for deer hunting actually has some Molly like panels on it where I could do, and I've never really looked at it, but you get the sense that that's a very universal implication where people could go out if they already have a pouch or a pack or anything. I mean, you could go look anywhere and you got that Molly webbing on the Hunt Ready vest, so people could really kind of fine tune it to their exact specifications.
100%. Yeah.
Hey, Nick, the kind of the, you know, we'd mentioned Pheasant Fest and, you know, why we strategically launched there. And, you know, we wanted to launch there because we knew we had the community there and we would get the feedback that we were wanting, you know, immediately. But kind of this real moment talking, you know, about the flexibility of Molly and, you know, the 612 system that First Spear has, you know, it was just totally surreal. I had sold a vest to a guy. He was ex-military. I think 4 hours later, he's tagging us on Instagram and, he's got his dog on his tailgate and, his brand new Hunt Ready pack. And he's taken a lot of kit that he had from the military and strapped it on there. And I mean, it was a surreal moment for me, but it was awesome too, to just see like these guys are, you know, especially that's been military, law enforcement, that have some of this kit, they can just literally go leverage it. You know, they have a canteen holder, they strap it right on and you're in business. And then that was the other kind of the thing too, that, you know, we kind of had to draw the line. We knew some pockets and pouches that we wanted to create that were near and dear to our heart, but, how are we going to make the right pocket pouch for everybody in the community? And so a lot of things, you know, that we've seen is, a lot of guys, especially the terrain, you know, they're carrying a sidearm into the field. I don't want to get into the holster business. I can't make a holster for every Glock, Beretta, Smith & Wesson out there, whatever guys are carrying. It's like, there's a million, you know, holsters out there that are way better than what I could create. Go get you a Molly holster, slap it on our vest and you're good to go. So that was kind of, again, just another feature to the whole thing.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's definitely one of those unique things where that world, you know, upland hunting is a small niche when you look at it relative to everything else, but the tactical niche and the, implications for Molly webbing stuff is so much greater than upland hunting. It really gives people access to a lot more like specific products. They can go out and find exactly what they're looking for, which I think is cool. And I haven't even scraped the surface as far as looking at what options there are. I've checked out the First Spear website and saw a bunch of their pockets because I was really looking at my current vest with the idea that I really love it. I love the one that I have, but that there's some, now having used it for 6 years, I've got some things that like, I would maybe like to have this here or carry this piece of gear here. And I could use a little bit of that customizability, which I think is pretty cool that Hunt Ready's delivering that to people. Tell me about your vest specifically and how you have your Hunt Ready vest currently set up.
Yeah. Yeah. So Jared mentioned I'm a lefty. I have mine set up around that aspect, right? And I'm also the current photographer for Hunt Ready. So don't upland community, don't hold that against us, right?
You're wearing a few hats, Heath.
I have on my right side, I have a First Spear pouch. That has a multi divider in it. And I keep some extra camera batteries, a few extra shells, and my cell phone in that right side. And then on the left side, I have one of our 12 round rail pouches. So that's what I'm pulling from. As mentioned earlier, right, we hunt a lot of states where you're in different species, you know, or could potentially run into, you know, multi species. So, I have that rail pouch because, especially when we're in like Kansas and in southern Nebraska, northern Missouri, pheasant and quail are, you know, you don't really know sometimes when your dog's on point what it's going to be. So,
yep.
So I'll line up, you know, a row of quail loads like on the outside and then a row of pheasant loads on the inside of that, you know, six and six. And so for me, it just works that way. I like having that organization and just knowing without looking, I can pull from whichever row. Then running, you know, either anywhere from one to two dogs in the field at all times, I've got a couple of water bottle pouches. I've got one, actually one water bottle is on my belt on my right side, so I can just easily access and pull that. And then I've got another water bottle that's on the left side on the back. That's just kind of a refill bottle. And then I actually have a hydration bladder for me attached to the very rear panel. And so always got plenty of water. And then, I've got a multi-purpose kit on the back that has just some, like a boar snake, a little bit of gun oil, like a couple small little picks and tools, you know, just in case quick gun repair type stuff. And then in the permanent storage, printed out copy of license, you know, the standard extra set of gloves, you know, nothing major. But that's how I have mine set up.
Cool. How about you, Jared?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of a little bit different and unique to Heath. I either run kind of the rail pouch, kind of the same scenario, just depending on if it's a multi-species type of hunt. But then I also kind of like our form flat pouch. That was one that was near and dear to my heart because of the fact of, you know, several places we get opportunities to hunt private and public land. And, you know, just I was always like having a vest set up that had steel in it and lead in it and, you know, swapping back and forth. Well, the form flat pouch allowed me to just kind of keep my loads in the box, set it down inside with the flap open, and then I could easily switch back out and put it back in my ammo can, you know, when we're ready to kind of move on to a private field or whatever. So that one's typically on there. And then I've got like a first aid kit on the very back panel, an extra large water bottle holster on the side for dogs. And then I got a personal smaller water holster for me, just so I don't drink out of the dog's water, which is something that happens from time to time. But, and then, you know, I've just got like a kind of a standard, Molly, you know, Velcro patch on the back that's got an Oklahoma flag and, you know, a back the blue patch on it. And it's something that if I need to add some more water or something in the field, I can easily detach it and put another extra large water holster on or whatever. And then inside, it's kind of the same story. I've got some, you know, loose gloves, license, you know, extra ear plugs if my ears start ringing and all that kind of good stuff. So,
yeah. Where are you guys and or where have you seen others attaching their transmitters, you know, your Garmin Alphas, your dog training transmitters and your GPSs? Where are those good spots to attach those on a Hunt Ready Vest?
Yeah. So every vest, just comes with a, it's basically a D-ring with a Velcro slip on it. And you can weave that into anywhere on the vest that has that laser cut material. You can weave that through and essentially put a D-ring in, right? So okay. It could be in front of a pouch on your right hip, or it could be behind, you know, your shell pouch on your left hip, or you know, really wherever you want it. I personally don't like to have I run a Garmin Alpha mainly. And I don't like to have that up like on my shoulders, you know.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of guys do that, and that's fine. We do have the capability of that. I mean, there's a webbing loops up there, right? So some of the guys in our group do run them that way, right? On their non-shooting shoulder, they'll just clip it in up high. And I personally just attach a carabiner clip to, you know, my Alpha and just clip it on a D-ring on my right side. And I actually set it back quite a ways, so it's not, I don't like it banging on my hip or any, you know, my thigh or anything like that. So I set mine up back a little ways. That's how I run mine.
How about you, Jared?
I don't actually run a GPS unit right now. I'm probably gonna have to switch that real quick with this new dog.
GSP.
So that's going to be kind of a new realm for me, but, you know, right now, I'm kind of in the same boat. I mentioned earlier, I just really don't like any obstructions across the shoulder area. So I run mine down on my left hip at this point, but, yeah, we'll see. We're going to make some investment in some new collars here shortly. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's cool. I, that's a question that's kind of interest to me because I've got a fairly high tech, or I guess you could say redundant, dog training system when I'm in the field. I shouldn't say training, but tracking and locating. I have a Garmin Alpha, but then I also have a Dogtra collar, and so I like to have my Dogtra, which controls my beeper and stuff, and this is mainly built on hunting in the grouse woods, but I have that on the front of my belt, which I really like. My Garmin Alpha, I used to always have that accessible. Now I no longer need it accessible because I don't use it for training. It's tracking only, and I've got one of the Garmin watches, so I could pretty much squirrel that Garmin Alpha. I'd want to be able to get at it, but I could squirrel it away somewhere. And again, the customizability would be key there. I could stash it behind a pocket or something just to kind of get it out of my way. The other thing that I think is cool, especially, you know, I do for the past couple of years, I've done two very contrasting hunts where I spend a lot of time in the grouse woods where profile matters. And this is something I talked to Heath about, trying to maintain as slim of a profile as I can just to help me getting through the cover. And sometimes things like water bottle holders and stuff can widen that profile. So the ability to change up how you're carrying water and doing things a little bit differently is something that I'd been thinking about even prior to seeing the Hunt Ready vest. But then I go out west and hunt. I'm hunting sharptails early season where water's like the paramount priority. Got to have enough water, and right. I'm not really concerned about my profile. So at that point, throwing on the bottle holders, putting in a bladder and everything, the ability to beef up your water supply is comes in handy. I mean, do you guys change up the vest based on locale and what you're doing in different pursuits?
At times I have pulled the hydration bladder off. Right.
Yep.
You know, and if I'm running one dog and it's going to be more of a, hey, we're going to go hit this patch of public. Right. And then we're going to move to the net. You know, if I know we're going to be kind of truck hopping. Right. You know, it's easy to jerk the hydration off and then just carry a Nalgene bottle for me and one of my bottle holders. And then, your traditional kind of squirt bottle or whatever for the dog and the other. Yeah, I mean, I do some, not extensively.
Sure.
But it's nice to have the ability.
Yeah.
You know? And you mentioned this earlier about, you know, early season or even preseason, right? Going to the range, shooting clay, yeah, stuff like that. You know, once I get used to my shell pouch options, I don't really switch those up much just because it's just,
right,
muscle memory, right? Gets there. So for me, I don't really switch that up very much.
Yeah, I could see where I'm kind of answering my own question in the sense that we keep hitting on this customizability. Once you get it dialed in to where you want it, apart from a few specific needs that you might have, you're gonna keep it mainly the same, but you've already have the ability to get it exactly where you need it, because, and then through trial and tribulation in the field, you can adjust it as you go. So
yeah, it's all about dialing it in. Yep.
Yeah. Let's talk about sizing real quick. Are there different sizes of the Hunt Ready vest? How does that play out?
Yeah. So out of the gate, we had a couple of belt sizes, just a regular belt size and a large belt size. And we are in the works, after getting some feedback and requests from the market, for a smaller belt. So that's in the works and should be launching relatively soon. In terms of, and that's really the major, you know, when you go to look at one and try and buy one, that's what you'll have to figure out, right? You know, waist size, yep, torso size. And so from there, there's quite a bit of adjustability, you know, in terms of the harness, game pouch, lowering and raising it. So there's not really a size to pick there. It's mainly getting that belt dialed in. And as mentioned earlier, that's really the key, right, is getting that weight where you want it, distributed, yep, evenly and in the right place. So that's the sizing structure that we have right now.
Yeah. And I'll just echo a little bit, you know, once you get that waist fitted up and it loaded up, you know, my challenge is I'm kind of a long leg guy, short torso. And so I needed a lot of adjustability, you know, for the torso height. And we've, you know, that's people in general. They're, you know, we're all made in different shapes and sizes. And so, I think, you know, you get the belt where you need it at and just get it fitted for your waist size. And what we've seen is that, you know, the amount of adjustability for the torso that we have in the vest has allowed, we literally did this at Pheasant Fest. There was a guy that came up and he was 6'5", 6'6", a man's man. and he put it on and it did have our large belt size on it. And his wife was standing next to him. And I said, here, let's just fit you up. And I said, no, obviously the waist size is going to be wrong. But so, we put it on her, adjusted it, you know, it went way down, obviously, yep, but she's like, I can't believe this just came off of him. And so I think that was kind of, a little bit of, you know, proof in the pudding that again, it's just getting that waist, properly sized out. And then we have enough of adjustability for people's torso size to get it really dialed in and locked in to a good fit for you.
Yeah, for sure. What else in this, you know, the last couple of months of these things being rolled out and people seeing them, getting their hands on them, have there been any other key things that you've heard from consumers, key like features that they're requesting or seeing or things that they've been really happy with? I mean, what are you hearing from consumers?
Yeah. So in terms of feedback or wants, right. We've had requests on color options, right.
Sure.
So, which is in the works. I've actually got a bunch of color swatches right here that I'm looking through, to make some decisions on. So, you know, we hope to be able to provide the market with a, you know, quote unquote, you know, non-hunter orange option.
Sure.
That was something which I think we probably expected, you know, and then some variations on pockets and pouches, which again, yep, we expected. And you know, there was that point in time where, you know, we just had to put a pin on the calendar and say, this is when we want to launch, and what we can get in place by that date is what we're going to have, right? And so, you know, at Pheasant Fest, we had what we had. And I think it was a fairly solid list of options, but you know, we're pursuing those requests that we've been getting around you know, different pouch styles, options, color options. The small belt, a smaller belt option was something that has been noted. And like I said, I have a prototype in hand that, we're tweaking a couple things, but that should be available pretty soon as well. Cool. And as Jared mentioned, you know, the sizing, my wife is fairly small. She's, you know, right around 5 foot or so. Yeah. She'll tell you 5'2" or 3", but you know, about 5 foot and, right about a 29 inch waist. And so that's really kind of the target we're trying to hit, right? Is that, you know, with the small belt, and then I have confirmed, you know, it'll all tighten down and she can wear that and have the weight distributed and it'll work. So that, cool. I think was the big one in terms of, you know, I don't want to call it a miss. It's just, you know, we didn't have that option out of the gate for some of those, folks that needed that small belt, but it's coming.
Good deal. Are there other, if people are asking you about, because this is one of the things that I was looking at, like the pocket, the different customization options around pockets and stuff. And I, you know, I completely understand that you guys don't want to, like Jared said, you're not going to provide a holster for every different kind of pistol and handgun when other people are doing that. So people can go to the Hunt Ready website. They can check out the Hunt Ready vest. They can go to First Spear, mm-hmm. and look at some of the stuff that they have. Are there other like huge outfits that are making these Molly style pockets and stuff that you're pointing people to go check out all the different things that they could potentially add to their Hunt Ready vest?
Yeah. So I haven't necessarily, you know, directed folks to specific vendors, but
okay.
here's the deal. There's so many.
Sure.
You know, even your Army surplus stores, you know, if it's standard, you know, a standard Molly option, which is essentially, and I don't recall the exact measurement, but it's the width of the strap or the width of the plastic that slides through.
Okay.
But it's pretty much going to be, again, it's kind of the standard. So the vast majority of your tactical gear makers, and if you just Google, you know, Molly pouches or Molly pockets or even tactical. Right. You know, even using that word, I think you'll be surprised at just how much there is out there.
Yeah. Throwing back a little bit to this was something that I actually kind of forgot to ask earlier. When you were testing these vests and prototyping and trying to obviously ultimately arrive at the one you would bring to market, were there any sort of, I guess, blooper moments or any things that you tried that just like completely didn't work, things that stick out in your mind through that process that ultimately got you to the vest that you have now?
Well, Nick, I mean, in honesty, those were all Jared's ideas. So
I knew that was coming.
No. Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's been a lot of things that hit the cutting room floor a long time ago. you know, we tried some different technologies, you know, might be something we pursue down the road, but I think it was just, there was going to be so much of a lead time, right, to come up with real solutions to problems or things that would resonate. You know, we decided to set those aside. One thing that I thought would be, I'm a bigger guy, you know, having Jared had mentioned earlier, you know, that having nothing in front of him and wanting that, you know, feeling that, you know, everything's open in front of you. Mm-hmm. I definitely get that, I don't want anything up on my shoulders, you know, no GPS units or anything like that. But I thought it might be cool to have a vest that, you know, had more of an area in the very front, right? I mean, almost like, you know, sometimes you'll see on turkey rigs or similar to like a traditional, I'll call it a traditional upland vest, right? That zips in the front or something, right? And have the attachability up front. It just, for me at least, and I think, you know, Jared can speak for his thoughts, but that was one of the iterations or a different prototype that we tried. And it was just too difficult to get that weight stabilized and it was just too much, you know, sure. When you tried to really plow through some of that cover. And even though everything was right up front, and it was super nice and handy. It just didn't work. I mean, that was one of the things I remember, Jared.
Yeah. And I think, you know, where do you draw the line at? I mean, to your point, Heath, and, you can hang a million things, pocket pouches off of you, but are they really needed? And so it was just trying to figure out where the balance was at and still keep it. You know, I want to obviously have my gear, and feel like the, you know, pack is attached to you and it moves with you as you're, you know, again, plowing through a cattail slough or whatever it is, going through the woods, that it's not flopping all over you, that it doesn't feel like, you know, it just feels a part of you, I guess. And, you know, just, I'm a feel guy. I don't know how else to explain that. If it feels good, then it just, and that's kind of what we settled on. I was like, this feels good to me. And I don't know how else to better explain that than that. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And the platform, you know, that First Spear created, I mean, once you get those pouches where you want them and get them attached, they have a very sewn on feel. Right? It's not, they don't slide and move and there's none of that that goes on. And so like Jared was saying, I mean, some of those first designs, it was just too, I don't know, just too, non-technical here, right word, but clunky, didn't feel right, you know?
Sure.
So some of those things we had to overcome.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I mean, I'll throw this in, like, if there's anybody listening that has not tried one of these strap vests, that, you know, the goal is to have a really well fitted waist belt to get the weight there centered and distributed. And then you got your shoulder straps, which are kind of holding things in place, but they're not bearing a lot of the load. You know, before I had a bird dog, I used to hunt with, you know, maybe your more traditional pick it up off the rack kind of shoulder vest sort of thing. And I couldn't imagine hunting with one of those today with the amount of gear that I carry. And sometimes I carry too much gear, but that's only because the good quality vests out there make that possible. But I couldn't imagine hunting with one of those anymore, because it would be swinging around and waving. And again, having, like Jared said, having that, like, you feel like you're one unit, all your gear is right there. I mean, that's an important part of logging mile after mile out in the upland. So again, if anybody hasn't tried one of these vests, I would seriously encourage you to beg, borrow, or, you know, don't steal, but you could get one and try it, because I think you'd be surprised at how much better you can have your gear set up and actually carry it. And, you know, this is talked about often when people talk about upland gear, is one piece of gear might weigh a couple of pounds, but take 10,000 steps a day and that poundage adds up. Right. So your efficiency in loading and carrying that gear is really important as far as how you're going to feel at the end of the day. And I'm sure you guys would wholeheartedly agree with that, which is why you invented a vest like this.
We may be a little bit biased, but it is a game changer. And I do understand also, it may not be for everyone, right? I mean, not everyone's going to go out and cover the kind of miles that I think we, you know, cover, and numerous others in the uplands, right? But, you know, that's the cool thing about the market too. Nick, you and I talked about this, you know, a little bit at Pheasant Fest and, you know, offline. But it's a pretty cool time to be an uplander. You know, there's a lot of cool products coming out and even competitors with us, and that's great, right? Competition's a good thing. I'm excited to be a part of it, to be honest. I mean, that's the thing for me, I think, is just, you know, it genuinely is a passion. I love to upland hunt. I love the dogs. My daughter's following me, you know, and interestingly enough, she's actually named after my great grandma that took me into the field all those years ago. So for me, it's kind of a big full circle, and to just have a small part in it you know, producing a vest that's going to resonate with some folks, and seeing that out in the field is pretty cool.
Yeah. One other question here before we wrap this up. This is something that is often discussed when you were talking gear, upland gear, durability. Can you guys speak to the quality and the durability nature of the materials that are used in this vest? Because I have a feeling that the materials were not chosen at random.
yeah, for sure. And that's a great question. You know, we've talked a lot about the configurability of the platform and some of the things that offers, right? But
yep.
But durability was definitely something that we targeted as far as the material and the approach that we took, and the material that we're using on the vest is a patented material that First Spear came up with. And, you know, for us, at least for me, you know, when we sit down and talked with First Spear and got our hands on samples of the product, you know, one of the things that they did, you know, they would throw us a sample of all of the laser cut fabric and just say, go ahead. I mean, give it a whirl, try and tear it, right? Tweak it, torque it, however you want.
Yeah.
And it's pretty remarkable. And at the end of the day, I mean, I figure if, you know, guys like the Navy SEALs are using it, and, you know, U.S. Marshals and, you know, different agencies like that around the globe, there's got to be something to it, right?
Yeah.
And then we've proven that out, obviously, just, you know, on our own field testing and things of that nature. And so it's extremely durable, and it's something that we'll, you know, we'll stand behind, as well as First Spear stands behind. So proud, cool. Proud of that aspect for sure.
Yeah. And I think one of the other things that I just quickly want to touch on too is, you know, one of the design elements for us is we wanted to build something that was, you know, made and sourced in the U.S. And so that was a key component too. So, you know, when you're looking at our vest, it is 100%, you know, sourced and made in the U.S. And so even down to the thread is what they call berry compliant. So just again, it's handcrafted with pride. And that was just something that we wanted to make sure that we were building as durable vests as we possibly could.
Yeah, great point.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, let's have each of you any final thoughts, and then make sure we get where should people go? Where can they see these vests? Where can they get a look at them? Where can they pre-order them? Where can they follow you on social media? All that stuff, Jared.
Thanks for having us on. If obviously you can go check out the vest at huntready.com. You can follow us on Instagram at hunt.ready, and send us a message if you have any questions, thoughts, comments. We love the feedback from the community. We're receiving lots of messages, and we're obviously going through people's feedback with a fine tooth comb, trying to figure out how our product, we can make it, you know, as best as it possibly can to serve our community.
Yeah, no, Nick, thank you for the opportunity. Genuinely appreciate it. It's been a good time. Hopefully this was helpful and informative to folks. But as Jared mentioned, like, if you got any questions, shoot us a note, hit the website, check us out on Instagram. I try and keep up with questions and comments, on Instagram as well. So, if we can help in any way, let us know, and look forward to seeing a few of our vests in the uplands this fall. It's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I have no doubt that we will be seeing some Hunt Ready vests in the field this fall. That's for sure. Want to thank you guys for joining me on this episode of the podcast. And like I mentioned to you, Heath and Jared, I mean, again, you guys are bird hunters trying to bring something to the upland hunting community that you value. It was your idea of what the, you know, quote unquote perfect vest would be if we could ever get to a perfect vest, but it's a step in that direction. And that gets me excited. And I think it gets the listeners excited too, when people like you deliver something to the market for upland bird hunters. So thanks for what you're doing. I wish you guys the best of luck with everything this year. And I'm sure our paths will cross again soon. So thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That's it for this episode of the Project Upland Podcast. Thank you for listening, everybody. Quick reminder, the Project Upland Podcast is brought to you by Onyx Hunt, Yukonuba Premium Performance Dog Food, Gumleaf USA, CZ USA, Turnbull Restoration, and Dakota 283 Kennels. Don't forget, you could be next week's winner of the podcast giveaway. All you have to do is leave us a rating, leave the podcast a review in your podcast app, subscribe to the podcast, share the podcast, or send us some feedback or guest suggestion. Thank you for listening, everybody. We'll catch you on the next episode. Onyx Hunt is the number one hunting GPS app. Join millions of other hunters who trust Onyx Hunt to find more game, discover new access, and hunt smarter. Onyx Hunt shows you nationwide public and private land boundaries. They've got topographic and 3D maps. You can track your route, location, and elevation profile. You can save maps for offline use and take Onyx Hunt with you wherever you go. The most comprehensive hunting tool you'll own. Download the Onyx Hunt app today and use the promo code BSP20 to save 20% on your next Onyx Hunt subscription. Know where you stand with Onyx.
Hey everyone, this is Nick from the Gun Dog It Yourself podcast. If you enjoyed this show, then you might want to check out my show as well. We highlight and break down the ins and outs of training your own hunting dog. Whether it's a bird dog or even the occasional hound dog episode, we cover all topics related to hunting dogs. Check out Gun Dog It Yourself on any podcast streaming platform and hit the subscribe button to be sure not to miss any future episodes.